And not just with the new cases themselves, with the case reviews. Remember the Manton-Moreland case where the review was held off-site and the community was not told that a review was underway until this outcome was announced. And then the community very quickly overruled it.
Would you mind summarizing that one for us?
Okay. Manton-Moreland was originally on a case. Let's see here. There had been a prior naked short selling case a couple of years before. I had nothing to do with that. The Manton-Moreland case was basically a sock puppeting case, but it was a political hot potato, and there were serious concerns that an off-site dispute had been imported on-site. On the one hand, this is one of our higher profile cases. On the one hand, you had the chief executive officer of a fairly good-sized company, Overstock.com. Who was openly posting, saying, "Hello, I am Patrick Byrne." Everybody believes that he really was Patrick Byrne, and says, "This is what I have to say here. This is what my position is." On the other hand, you had an account, Manton-Moreland, another account, Sammy Harris, that was widely suspected to be operated by a notable financial journalist, whom I will not name. Because he has consistently denied that that actually was. But the question is, number one, are these two accounts run by the same person, or by two people working so closely together that they're indistinguishable? And number two, well, do we try to link that, take the next step and link that to the real world account, or to the real world person? Basically, most of the community decided that they were run by the same person. Manton-Moreland had previously, long before that case was opened, he had previously been confirmed by CheckYouser that he was sock puppeteering. After the case closed and he was banned from the topic where he had been editing, he was confirmed again by CheckYouser that he had started a new sock puppet account editing the topic again. The arbitration committee became aware of this, ran the CheckYouser, confirmed it very carefully, of course. Placed an indefinite block on the new account and a 2-week block on the Manton-Moreland account. Did not notify the community that it was reconsidering the case and announced it. Now, was there a clear and compelling reason why they could not say they were reopening the case? They've got a format to do that, but they didn't use it. They announced the outcome. And again, this is where it gets more blogging than journalism. I proposed the site ban then. Yeah, enough is enough. And just about unanimously, the community approved it at that point, and he was site banned. But this is one of the ways in which, one of several ways in which I think the arbitration committee acted privately without compelling reason, and in a way that ultimately diminished its own stature. I would have preferred that the decision come from the committee itself. I mean, you know, it was something that I felt very much needed to be done. I didn't do it for, you know, drama or in order to slap the committee in the face, but it was just something that a very large number of people felt needed to be done at that point. This was not somebody who was a prolific sock puppeteer, but the particular shape and dynamics of the dispute, because it related so openly to at least one side of a real world dispute of some weight and merit, had caused a huge amount of disruption on the site for 2 years, and we didn't want to be in the middle of that. I think most people agreed. You know, it's like the bartender saying, "Please take it outside."
I think that they need to come up with firm guidelines for when they can take a case offline, because to allow it to be done arbitrarily seems to be getting abused at the moment.
It certainly seems that way.
Even if it's not being abused, the appearance of abuse seems to exist, because nobody really knows what's going on. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest problem, is that since there's so little information, you know, all this speculation seems to be revolving around what might be happening, and that's really undermining their authority, I think.
I could allow some parameters for, you know, for some leeway for unforeseen circumstances, but I think that in unforeseen circumstances, they should be expected to give some kind of coherent summary of the nature of the concerns that caused them to bring a certain decision off-site, because they have structures on-site for a reason. And I am uncomfortable with the frequency with which they've been circumventing that. Maybe not if compelling reasons happened all that frequently, then okay. But I see them doing it off-site more or less because they can.
And I think if they want people to believe there really are compelling reasons, you know, they have to find some way to justify that.
Yeah. I mean, in order for me to trust them in the protecting children's privacy case, when they were hearing, you know, nearly all of their cases on site, we accepted that because of the sensitivity of the subject material. And I think that if they were judicious about which cases they brought off site, then we would understand when it's not too clearly articulated why.
Yes. But in this case, it seems the stated reason is random and, well, it's almost from trial by jury. Hear me, if you please. These are very strange proceedings, for permit me to remark on the merit of my pleadings. You're at present in the dark.
Somebody was also mentioning Kafka.
Yeah, I saw that. Yes.
Which is rather justified. I mean, you've read, I'm not sure if you've probably heard of the story with the,
believe me, I have a hard time rolling out of bed this morning, and there's an apple that's lodged in my back now.
It's probably a reference to The Trial, though, which is a comedy about a kangaroo court where the person is, which is pretty much as you said, the accused is not allowed to hear the evidence against him and so on.
Probably something came up in yesterday's episode. I'm going to re-ask it, since you have another opinion in here. It would be that, if we had to re-elect a few arbitrators, would you be up to that?
Well, that would be the last-ditch thing. I mean, you know.
Well, that raises the question, is the problem systemic within the structure of arbitration committee as it has evolved, or is the problem the people who are on the arbitration committee? I'm not sure that's an easy question to answer.
I do think that good people who were sensible before they got into the arbitration committee are now acting much worse than I would have ever expected for them now that they are on the arbitration committee.
I wouldn't even look at the voting in my own case if I were to, you know, if there were an election next week. But based on the way that certain arbitrators have conducted themselves, based on the way that certain arbitrators have commented upon evidence and upon their examination of evidence. Yeah, there's a couple I wouldn't put it back in there. You know, I don't want to get too far ahead of things. You know, yes, the last ditch thing would be, you know, Jimbo can dissolve ARPOM, like the Queen can dissolve Parliament. It's not likely to happen. And I don't want to jump the gun by getting into that conversation before we've heard from them. I think at this point, reassessing ARPCOM's mandate and establishing clear parameters for their proceedings and for their scope is probably the best solution. If something more becomes necessary, then you know, yes, it could go that far, but let's not get out the torches and pitchforks too quickly. I still have some hay to make.
Do you think that it would be helpful to say that if the Foundation wants the ARPOM to act in their behalf as the highest court, that they should provide the ARPOM with some one or two classes each?
Well, I certainly felt since the Jim 62 SCH case that when the arbitration committee called upon the community to bring cases of off-site harassment to them, specifically called upon that in their finding, I felt very strongly that they needed to either take specific training in how to deal with harassment, or they needed to retain the services of a consultant for that type of case. I do not think that a committee of 14 men and one woman who've been running an encyclopedia are qualified to do that responsibly. Running a wiki project to perfection does not translate into dealing with harassment.
Does anyone know about arbitration committees on other language PDAs?
I believe that most of them don't have one. They may have one on the German Wikipedia.
Because, you know, sometimes comparisons with the way that other institutions are working can be illuminating.
And in the other languages, they don't have Appeal of Jimbo. Which is a significant factor here.
I mean, it's very interesting, you know, the structure, to me it is anyway, that the structure on other language versions of Wikipedia is so very different.
Well,
you know, the whole governance structure is different.
Wikipedia is the wild, or English Wikipedia is the Wild West, the unruly child. A lot of the other projects, you know, how can we say it? We're the, you know, Harry Potter and the Weasleys?
Yes.
We're the Weasleys.
Well, that's probably a good place, as good a place to end this as any. Shall we, sign off?
Okay. Any final thoughts?
Well, I'd encourage everyone to participate in the request for comment. I do feel that there are issues, and we're not going to, solve anything by letting the ARPCOM continue on as they were without any statement from the community about their progress and how they're doing.
Mitch?
Really don't know at this point. I'm really bad with final thoughts. I'll leave it till I do it.
I find it interesting that this is going on at the same time as the review for RFA. It seems that there's a lot of discussion going on about what should the hierarchy of Wikipedia look like. And it doesn't seem that it really is settled. It seems like it's undergoing a great deal of reform right now. And I definitely think that people who are interested in being part of that reform should be part of those discussions, as Shu was saying. But that two major processes are undergoing this kind of commentary and discussion simultaneously is, I think, very revealing.
Hey, you know, I've announced a boycott of RFA Review.
I saw that.
I've been very articulate about my reasons, but so that's my participation there.
We shall have to cover RFA Review in a future episode.
Yes, well, I would like to invite people who to join me in the performance review that I've started, because I could certainly use more research. I have some directions where I'd certainly like some assistance. I'm compiling statistical evidence on various ways that the arbitration committee has functioned over its four-year history, not getting into individual cases and their dynamics so much as how the committee handles cases, and I could use assistance in the research. And I'd also like to, while I encourage people to participate in this RFC, please exercise restraint, and the great danger with this is that people will try to abuse it as a platform to rehear their own cases. I certainly have had the temptation to do that myself, but I don't think that that's in the best interest of the site, and I want to ask other people who may have grievances unresolved to follow my example in this.
Right.
Okay.
I guess you can put that into this.
Yeah.